dear beautiful people. Welcome back to the show. And today's episode is special, very special in a way, because we have Tamara, my dear friend, who is living here in Ubud, Bali. And every time I meet her, our conversations are filled with wisdom and just so much insight, because Tamara has gathered so much information and experience during her years that whenever I have a problem, I can just consult with her, and she always picks the most wise advice and guidance. So that's why I feel so privileged to have you as my first guest in this podcast. And I'm sure that listeners can take away a lot of new ways how to apply more self-care and more grounding and more connection with their body and sensuality from this podcast. So we'll do our best to, I'll do my best to pick Tamara's brain to get the most from her to you. And if you have any questions for Tamara, you can always leave them in the comments or text me personally. And we'll probably do more episodes with Tamara because there's just so much to cover. But first, a little bit about you, because every time we speak, I find out new things about you. Like, oh, you've also done that. So how do you present yourself these days? Because I know you do so many things. You do the healing days, you do the spiritual healing days, you do one-on-one sessions, you do women's circles, you do full moon circles, womb wisdom workshops, you do trips, you do so many things. So yeah, I don't know. How do you present yourself to people? Because I never knew how to do that for you.
Thank you. And thank you for this opportunity. It's always beautiful when we sit and talk. So thank you. And now lovely to share with other people. So I hope we can add some value, which is always important to me. And I love to do a variety of things. For me, it's about following what lights me up. So the Ubud Spiritual Healing Day, I recently got very excited about the Chrono Wave Vitality Sessions, which I love to share and still training in, which includes everything about energy and frequencies, which for me is the future of medicine. And I believe everything is energy. And I love, 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 my passion for the last 10 years has been holding space, holding workshops for women, which I now do about every month at Yoga Barn. And that is also allows me to deepen the experience in having one-on-one sessions with people. And I have an online full moon circle, which I love to do, which basically it all falls under the same umbrella. There's something about the feminine wisdom and honoring the sacred feminine, honoring Bali. And it's womb wisdom workshops. There's a lot under the same umbrella, just to define it, to break it down into smaller subjects so we can go a bit deeper. But it's kind of really all the same.
I was about to say that there's a common denominator in everything that we do. And I think that's the difficulty for multi-passionate people, or that you want to do so many different things and you kind of feel like it's not aligned. That was for me, certainly. Lost for a couple of months about it. And then I realized, but there's a common denominator. What is uniting all of that? For me, that's coming into true happiness, inside out, true vitality. That's why I call the show the Vitality Hub, to have everything, all of that. It can be health, it can be feminine, sensuality. That's something that we talked about, right?
Absolutely.
And now sharing more about intuitive eating and emotional eating. I know you shared with me your story.
Yeah.
So maybe we can go about what brought you into being so curious about the feminine ways of being and nurturing that side, and, you know, all of the works that you do for women.
Yeah, that's a great question, because that starts with turning wounds into wisdom. And from a very young age, also having been brought up in a household that was abusive, that a lot of this, very much when I reflect upon it, started with me being the eldest and protecting my mother. Mm-hmm. So there was that protective mechanism built in me from a very young age. I remember even protecting girlfriends when I was a teenager from, you know, what was ever happening with unwanted attention. And I was slowly over the years, I realized that I had a very strong spiritual bent and that I trusted that more and more. I felt guided from a very young age. I don't know where that came from, but I'm really grateful I wasn't brought up in religious dogma because it allowed me to be more free. And I also, because I had an eating disorder in my early years, in my early 20s, I also could really find compassion for myself and for women. I'm a work in progress. It took time, but I felt that more in a very simple sense. I wanted women to feel better about themselves. And how could I be of service in that way?
That's beautiful. Can we talk a bit about your eating disorder journey? Because I actually recently released my story with disordered eating. I mean, it wasn't a full coverage because, you know, there's always so many pieces, but it was very actually interesting for myself to reflect about it because it's been ages since I actually looked back where it started. And actually, when I started recording, I realized it started at 6 years and 13 years of age, which I never thought about it before. So it's interesting, how did that come about for you? I know it can be like an hours long of podcast just about this, but
it can. Yeah,
but yeah, but just, I guess, for women who are listening, because I talk a lot about nutrition and finding ways to come into your body and find new ways of relating to your body and to food. It's just very interesting to hear different stories of how did that came to you and how did you overcome it?
Yes, it's a great question. My understanding with an eating disorder, and also because at that time I carried a lot of shame around it, a lot of shame. And I realized also it was about control, but a lot of people who come from an abusive or trauma background have an eating disorder or have had some kind of control around their food. Because when we're out of control, it feels like we're somehow wanting to control that. And I started to own it and realize that this was unhealthy. And once I started to accept responsibility for it, even though I didn't use those words in my 20s, that's basically what I was doing. And I did find, this was in Los Angeles at the time, and I did find a great therapist who I still didn't feel, I felt safe with. I didn't trust myself, but I felt safe with. And once I started voicing this truth or this secret that I was carrying, things started to free up. And it's, for me, it was amazing. Owning that was set me on a path of realizing that when I take full responsibility, and as I said, I'm a work in progress, when I start, you know, stop blaming people and all the outside, and that what I'm creating is totally up to me. And it was simple, small steps like that. And it basically, now I'm exaggerating a little bit, it basically stopped overnight. As soon as I voiced it and felt the shame and felt what it was like and started to look into the root cause of this and stop blaming myself, then things started to shift. And I have found that with a lot of different situations in my life.
I have two questions. How did the eating disorder manifest? Because, you know, there are so many forms.
Sure.
So that's the first question. And then I will go to the second question after.
Okay. The eating disorder I had was bulimia, basically. So that I would use food to numb. And then the control of getting rid of the food and feeling ashamed of what I was doing to my body and all of this. It was a vicious cycle for quite a few years. But it manifested, I don't know how to answer that. It's basically, for me, a trauma response. And I wanted to numb my pain and then control what I was doing. So it's quite a complicated issue. So it you know, if you want to, it's a bit difficult to go deeper in a podcast. It's a very personal, but also a very individual thing. Even though the symptoms are the same, there's still ways that it shows up in life as well.
Yeah, and that's what I feel like. People want to find a structure and one way that fits to everyone and create a program and just like, take this program and you'll be healed. Because I was researching some programs that are out there for emotional eating, for disordered eating, and they're saying, if you take this program, you'll be free forever. And it says whatever the disorder you have. I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. It's super individual. So that's the second question. Then how, because the eating, disordered eating or eating disorder, because there are two different things, right? For me, I had the disordered eating pattern. I didn't really have bulimia as such. But still, it was so ingrained in me, this notion of overeating, of not knowing when I'm full, not knowing when I'm hungry. I just can't imagine it stopping overnight. Because for me, it took quite a few years to actually grasp. Of course, I was working without a therapist, just with myself. And that's, in the last episode, that's what I said. The number one thing that I would have done differently, I would have found someone to help me and not just like, I'll do it myself. Because I was just too ashamed to admit that I had it even. So yeah, and it's interesting how for you that could stop so quickly, because it's a habit as well as a trauma response. So it's kind of mixed.
Well, it's an addiction. It's not just a habit. Yeah. It's an addiction. And the way I see it is that there were also small steps along the way. First owning that there's a problem, you know, first admitting that, oh my God, this is a problem for me, is one of the steps along the way. Then I feel it's important upon reflection that it's really important to be seen and heard in your vulnerability. Like for me to admit to anybody that this was a problem was really in a vulnerable place. It took a lot of courage. And that was still, you know, sharing it with someone who was objective, who was a professional, who wasn't someone close to me. That was a whole other, you know, ball game to do that. And I didn't feel like I had to. But when it came out organically, then I felt safe, because a lot of women don't feel safe. And one of the reasons that this kind of thing happens is because we don't feel safe. We're not trusting ourselves. We're not owning that we have. It is quite complicated, actually, when I think about it, because it's not one thing. We're looking at body, mind, and spirit. So if we don't address all of these issues, I believe, or all of the things, the layers that we have, we can just look at the mind and expect to be healing that. We need to look at the needs and the vulnerability and the spiritual aspect. What is it that we need? What are we trying to fill? What are we trying to run away from? What are we trying to numb? So we need to ask ourselves the big questions. I needed to take responsibility for what was going on. I needed to admit that there was something not right. I don't believe in right and wrong, but something that was a problem. And I needed to be really kind and gentle with myself. Those aspects of it took a lot longer. Stopping was another, really, when I feel into it, was another form of control. But finding the self-compassion and finding about those fragmented pieces of me that I created to come back home to me was a whole other journey. So that's why it's a little bit difficult to answer, difficult for me to answer, because there were so many aspects of it. But owning it first certainly was able to stop the behavior. The pain, the spiritual aspects, the releasing of the shame, and all of that was a longer journey, if that makes sense. The personal work, the shadow work, the shadow work.
Yeah, that makes so much sense what you shared about the mind, body, and spirit, and that the behavior stopped, but the actual returning to your body and to yourself took way longer. And that really rings bells with me, because that was the story for me. Like, I stopped restricting my food from, you know, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., which I was doing, like intermittent fasting, a lot of detoxes and all that kind of stuff. But to really feel nourishment with food and to restore that relationship, because for a lot of years, for me, that was one of the biggest satisfactions in life. I didn't really have other ways to cope, definitely. So innervating also the nervous system, we can talk about that a little bit later on, how food can be a learned way to regulate ourselves and escape from emotions. And Yeah, just people thinking that just by simply understanding why they do it, they will change. I just find that for a lot of years, I knew that I'm doing this to control, but actually it took something else to change it. It took embodying the change and not just from the mind down. Sometimes for some people it works, the mind down approach, but I feel like for a lot of people, it needs to be bottom up. Does that make sense for you?
Absolutely. Everybody's unique and has a different way of beginning their journey. And we need to start, you know, some of us need to start with our mind because it's an intellectual, you know, we need to rationalize it and intellectualize it. And then that's the beginning. And then slowly when we realize that this is not embodying it, that we need to go deeper, and the more personal work we do, then we start to realize that our bodies are involved, the whole mind-body connection. And for me, the spiritual aspect, I believe, mm-hmm. is one of the most important things that a lot of people ignore. And also one of the realizations for me was making friends with my body, because I was at war with my image of my body for so long, or at war with myself. As a recovering perfectionist, I was brought up to believe that if I looked perfect and said the right things and behaved in a perfect way, I would be loved. So for me, being able to make friends with my body and love her exactly the way she is, and realize that I didn't need to be perfect to be loved. And for women, I've noticed it over the years a lot. A lot of us are carrying that. And so it's a beautiful journey, but it's a process. And I also had to admit to myself that this was a lifelong journey and that there were many layers to uncover. This was never a one and done thing for me. It was there was a lot of unraveling to do and still do. But it is something I'm really committed to. For me, my personal growth and spiritual growth is my highest calling. I believe that if I can realize my highest potential, maybe not in this lifetime, maybe, then I can be of greater service. And I have now become more and more and more grateful for some of the things that I've been through that were really challenging, because I've learned more about myself. I've been able to turn some of these wounds into wisdom and to be of service. And I have more compassion for myself and, of course, for others. I am able to be kinder to myself and kinder to my body. I've been able to notice that there is more wisdom in my body than I have ever realized before. And that when I check in with her every day, for me, it's part of my morning ritual. I check in with her and ask her what she needs. And I look in the mirror and I ask myself, how can I make you happy today?
Oh, that's beautiful.
And these over the years have served me really well. I find that I'm certainly, as I said, not perfect, but I find when I check in and I give myself moments of silence during the day and I check in with her, she guides me in very healthy ways. I make more healthy choices.
I totally hear you. And at the same time, I recently had this realization that I can't really teach anyone anything. Like, I can talk about all the different ways that help me, but it doesn't really help. I can talk about meditation for hours, but until that person actually sits and meditates, only then they can feel a difference. For me, that was with Vipassana. Like, I kept hearing about meditation and Vipassana, like, maybe it's like this, maybe it's like, but until I actually tasted what it's like, only then I could know. And then I realized there's not even no point in actually talking anything. And then that's why I was reflecting, what do I want this podcast to be? And I realized maybe the first time they hear something here, or maybe it's the second time, sometimes it takes like 10 times to hear an idea to actually start practicing it. For me, that was a lot with love letters that Liz Gilbert talks about, writing love letters to yourself, letters from love. And I never really gave it a try until like I heard about it this time. I'm like, okay, I have time, I have energy, I will do it. And I fell in love with the practice. Now I'm doing it. I'm just like, why did I didn't do it before? And that's the thing. You can provide all the knowledge, but it doesn't really work. And that's why I want this podcast to be about experience and sharing what worked for us. And at the same time, maybe giving some small bits of things to do to start experiencing what it's like. Because I know for me, a few years ago, if I would have listened to this podcast or any other podcast about accepting your body, I would be like, oh, yeah, of course, accepting my body, yeah, you know, thinking that I do, but actually I didn't. And kind of when I started talking about it with my girlfriends, it kind of seemed that everybody has this and that there's no way to change it. And the more I worked with it, I realized actually there is another way of being with my body and actually loving the body that I'm in. Because all my life, I wanted a different body, no matter how skinny I was, on the verge of not even having my period. And now I'm probably in my biggest body ever. And I love it. I love every piece of this soft and, you know. So what would you say would be the first steps to actually getting into your body and falling in love with it for someone who doesn't really love their body?
For me, one of the most important things I did, something I've just mentioned, was gifting myself time in the morning, delaying any screen time, but gifting myself to be with me. I invite women in all my workshops to do this for themselves and at least start with 5 minutes. What I find is that there are so many people who are uncomfortable with being with themselves without doing something. We're addicted to this, and the first thing we do, some of us, is pick up our phone or be busy, this incessant busyness, which is actually not true. And for a lot of us, some of us I understand, if once we slow down, once I invite women to slow down, gift themselves 5 minutes just to be, and that's not meditating, it's not writing, it's not doing anything. I gift myself time every day, even if I don't do it first thing, because I've got other rituals that I do. I will gift myself time absolutely to be still and quiet. And I lay there and smile at myself. And I believe that slowing down invites things to come up. And then the next question to ask oneself is, can I be with this? Whatever comes up, to allow yourself to feel whatever comes up. Feeling our feelings about everything is probably one of the most important spiritual practices for body, mind, and spirit. But to be with yourself, to be with oneself, and just smiling and watching your thoughts, watch the thoughts, and that the nature of the mind is to be busy. So it's being able to see the thoughts, watch the thoughts, and detach from them.
But then it's like meditating.
It's not meditating. Mindfulness.
Watching.
Meditating is actually sitting, well, for me, is making the intention to meditate. This is making the intention to do nothing. Meditating is a doing word. So we're sitting there and we have the intention to still our mind. Whereas this is not stilling the mind. This is going, there's another thought, there's another thought, there's another thought, there's
because
another
for me,
thought.
Meditation is
that's all mindfulness. So this is what I'm talking about is more mindfulness.
Yeah, because I guess I was brought up with this notion that meditation is mindfulness. So yeah. I mean,
for me,
when I went to Vipassana, I found out a different way of meditation, but that's for me, it's not what I practice. And for me, it's more about meeting with myself and just noticing what's happening.
Sure.
And because when I just am in the stillness and like doing nothing, I find that my mind just wanders, and I still need to have that intention of connecting with myself. And when I have that intention to see what's happening inside of me, how's my brain doing, how's my heart feeling, how's my womb feeling, how's my whole body, and then okay, it's like a somatic practice to scan the body and see what's happening, where's the discomfort, and being able to be with that. That's again, what do you do in Vipassana? Scan your body and see where's the discomfort and be with that. So it's kind of like a combination of all.
I'm classically trained in meditation. So for me, it's more sitting and going, okay, I have the intention, you know, to When I lay still and quiet, it's completely different. I don't attach to the thoughts. My mind can be busy, can be busy, can be busy. I just allow then to, something will come up, something will present itself, a sadness, a resentment, an anger, and, you know, another old friend may come up. And then I'm like, okay, I see you, I hear you. And for me, that's important. It's that which is different to what you're talking about. I invite some of these old friends in. It can be a happiness. It can be a bliss. It can be an awe or a beautiful moment. But I'm inviting, I'm allowing whatever is there. I'm not in a doing state.
Yeah, that's what I do. I call it more of a somatic practice. Yeah. I love it. And I feel like that was my biggest step towards freeing my relationship with food and body, because for me, food was to numb the discomfort, to escape the discomfort. And when I trained, I mean, I'm still in my lifelong journey, what you say, trained this ability to sit with the discomfort, then I don't need to escape it. I can just be that. And then, yeah, I guess having that practice in the morning or evening, because if you don't really set a time for that, it's very easy to wake up and go about your day.
Yes, it is.
Lose it. I know you teach a lot about self-care practices, and there are so many. What are self-care practices for you, and what's your favorite one?
Wow.
Or favorite three, because now you have so many.
Yeah. And it depends on what's happening to me on the day. I believe the way we wake up is really, really important. And this is what I do in the morning. I check in with myself and with my hand on my heart, because when I put my hand on my heart, it immediately activates the heart chakra. Mm. And I ask myself, how am I really feeling? And then I pause and listen, and can I be with this? And that is might take 2-3 minutes, even if you delayed, you know, what you do first thing in the morning, this, even if you just started your day with that and set an intention, would absolutely set you up for a beautiful day. The other thing that I believe is really important, especially for women, is to check in with your body, and which I talked about a little bit before. And I say to her, what is it you need today? I may not get an answer right away, but what I've noticed over the years is that I get directed into healthier choices, which is something I mentioned before. The other practice for me that has been a practice of mine for 40 years is gratitude, waking up with gratitude. And then I've ended up over the years being grateful for all of it, not just for the blessings, well, not for what we call blessings. I believe some of our challenges are blessings in disguise. So I'm grateful for my body, my health. I'm grateful for a roof, you know, simple, simple things even. And then grateful for the people in my life, grateful for whatever it is that comes up in that day. Once again, I allow it to come up organically. And I can sometimes speak it out loud. I don't necessarily write them down, but I kind of just lay there going, oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, Mother Nature, for the water I drink, it's really, and it's different every day. Glad I woke up out of sleep. So those simple practices for me, I believe, will hold you in good stead. And it takes 5 minutes in the morning. Way to start your day.
That's exactly what I always try to convey to my clients and participants of my group workshops. Just 3 minutes a day, even 1 minute, can do a big difference when you stack it over, because people think that they need to meditate for half an hour. And if they don't have half an hour, then like, I won't meditate. That's, I guess, the big difference is where you can just allow yourself 5 minutes. But the thing is that sometimes people don't even find those 5 minutes because they don't make it a priority. And I totally understand them, because sometimes when I'm with my partner, we wake up and we start chatting, we start doing something, and it's just goes out of their mind. And I can imagine people who have kids, even harder, you know, maybe they are woken up by the kids, or maybe you're woken up by your dog that you need to walk. So also there's all these life circumstances. So what would you say to those people? Because you've been teaching self-care practices for so long, you've probably seen so many different life stations.
Absolutely. And I also acknowledge that there is, you know, a lot of us are on autopilot, so that we don't even have the awareness to go, what do I need? So in that way, to create that time, I invite women to put a reminder in their phone just for 5 minutes. I invite them to put it on their mirror in their bathroom. You know, I'm so grateful I can gift myself 5 minutes today. And it, all of these little auto suggestions are reminders, are there. And eventually, it might not happen every day, but you eventually, what I have found is that women go, oh yes, I have 5 minutes. We can find 5 minutes. I know that it, for some people, it's definitely not easy. And I also know that we can set it up and allow ourselves, because once we've got to do it for ourselves, what I've noticed with women, especially mothers, we expect other people to kind of do these things for us. It will not happen. Being a mother is probably the most important job on the planet. And if we don't replenish ourselves, then we're not there fully for our families. And we also become resentful. So it's us first, our self-care first. But even starting with 5 minutes, and I know it takes time and courage, and I also know that women not only need it, they deserve it, and it's a gift. And we can only do it for ourselves. Being a mother is a thankless task. And once we step into our power about it, reclaim our power, that I deserve some time for myself. And it starts to set things in motion within the family, that these things, then all of a sudden people start to fall in line with what you decide to do, but you have to decide to do it first. And however that is, that turns out for you, gifting yourself even 5 minutes to lay and be still. And I can imagine how difficult it is to find that when people are working full time, looking after families full time. And yeah, even if it's 5 minutes before you go to sleep, without this, if we can gift ourselves a dopamine detox, take our time off this, then I feel quite strongly that there will be 5 minutes there that you can just lay still, feel the sensations in your body, gift yourself time to consciously do some conscious breathing. And there are definitely ways to set that up. If you don't like the idea of putting it on the mirror or on your phone, you can get those little round stickers and put them around the house, and they're a reminder. Like there are ways to remind ourselves.
To look at it creatively. Because for some of my clients, as you just suggest, just using the time like just after they brush their teeth, just take one deep breath to start with that and just look at themselves in the mirror and lock yourself in the bathroom, you know, because even mothers can do that. I mean, or sometimes they can't, but a lot of times you can have a bit of your bathroom time, I mean, and to use that bathroom time as a practice. And every time you go to a bathroom, to remind yourself in the day. And I sometimes also practice that. I try to practice that with food, like every time I sit down to eat, also to ground myself in the body. And just those small little bursts throughout the day can also be very, very helpful. But there's one thing that I notice is that a person has to either reach a rock bottom to be able to commit to that. They have to kind of, sometimes there is this kind of thing that people are worse off by not being in their worst because they never make a change. They kind of just, it's not that bad for them to change something. It's like, not the best, but not the worst. But when they reach rock bottom, they're like, okay, I have to do something. And that's when I see women just committing and prioritizing themselves and just shooting through the roof. Have you found that? No?
Not in my experience. I find that if I can introduce women, share very simple grounded practices that they're more, that they can incorporate into their life, so they don't go into overwhelm about, oh, it's another have to. A lot of, when I talk about sacred self-care, for a lot of women, it sounds like, oh, it's another have to. So if I can take the charge out of it and go, for example, one of the things I started with workshops many years ago was the idea of incorporating these things into your everyday life. So you were talking about brushing your teeth. So I invite women to brush their teeth with their non-dominant hand. All the practices that you get up and do on autopilot, it's about, for me, how I share it with them is bring some self-awareness into it so that you're present when you're brushing your teeth and you're choosing to brush with your non-dominant hand, which helps the neuroplasticity, while you're looking in the mirror and saying, how can I make you happy today? So there's, I believe in stacking the odds in our favor. So even if you're, if you get out of bed on autopilot, if you can set up little reminders to go, okay, I'm brushing my teeth, I'm looking at myself in the mirror and acknowledging how much courage it takes to do this, even though they're simple grounded practices, you're all of a sudden being present and you're doing something for yourself. Women, it's like, oh my God, and this is not hitting rock bottom. They're just incorporating it. Some, I know some people, absolutely. But these are just incorporating it into things that they do every day. For example, when I first introduced the shower meditation many years ago, this was something that women could do when every day in the shower and this.
That's what I do.
Turn the light, turn the water into this beautiful light. Their energy just shifted. They're washing away. They're feeling more empowered because they're doing something for themselves. But it's not another have to. All this is these daily little rituals that we do. If we bring awareness to these daily things we do every day, then it becomes a ritual. And we're like, oh, all of a sudden I've done something for myself. I've noticed that I feel better.
I think it comes down a lot to environment shaping. If we make our environments conducive and helpful for us to make the change, like, you know, put a reminder. Because what I meant by hitting rock bottom and then only committing to seriously doing that is like what you were sharing about the eating disorder. We had to realize like, oh, this is actually like, I'm super low. Like, I need to do something. And sometimes when I, like, even those little tricks, yeah, they can help. But to really make a big shift, so, like, I just found that one has to realize, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't live like this anymore. I have to make a change.
For some people. Yeah, I agree. I agree that for some of us, it might need to be a crisis. But what I share with women is, I don't want you to get to a crisis before. I want you to choose you first. I want you to choose your sacred self-care. And that's why I believe in simple, so that you can create something not only to think about, but body, mind, and spirit. I can do this simple thing. And this will, once we start to feel better in simple ways, we may sit in meditation for 5 minutes. We may start blessing our food. We may start blessing our water. We may start going on morning walks. It starts with the little things, not when it's a have to, but because I've gone, oh, I want to do this for myself. I want to do this for my family. Mm-hmm. If I take care of myself, I'm going to be a better mother, partner. You know, all of the things I'm going to be better to myself. And keeping our promises to ourselves, these little promises helps to heal self-betrayal, helps us to love ourselves more.
And that's the thing that I found, that a lot of people that I work with, they feel that they fail themselves by not being able to keep up those, even the smallest habits. Like, for example, Mel Robbins talk about the high five habit, where you just high five yourself in the mirror as a way of like, good job, you go. And people are like, okay, I will really do this. And then you forget, and now I forgot this. And then when I talk about all these different practices, they're like, oh yeah, I know, yeah, gratitude practice. I know this. But they're not practicing it. So what do you say to those people who know about gratitude practice, who know to sit with yourself and observe? And because I find myself actually in those kind of positions sometimes as well, when I know all the things, but sometimes I'm just like, you know, I just don't feel like it.
Yeah, me too, still. Mm-hmm. And for me has been the most important practice in those moments, because we're all going to cycle in and out of these things. And the most important thing I've found that works for me and still works for me is to find loads of self-compassion and make it okay. Okay, I missed that. That's okay. Because for many, many, many years, I would criticize myself about it or beat myself up. Oh, I didn't do that. I'm useless. I'm, you know, all of these things. And the biggest practice for me, most important, was just to go, it's okay. Tomorrow I'll do better. I found always, always, always loads of self-compassion. And if I can do that, then the thing is the self-compassion is the most important self-practice. And then the thing is I begin to go, oh, I'm really grateful that I missed that this morning because I was able to find more self-compassion for myself. And I believe that is one of the most important practices. We are all going to mess up. We are all going to betray ourselves at times. We are all going to self-sabotage at times. And instead of beating ourselves up about it, and as women, we use these things to beat ourselves up. Instead of doing that or criticizing ourselves, my favorite one was, oh, you bloody idiot. And I wouldn't say that to my best friend. I wouldn't say that to anybody. Or maybe, it depends. No, but I had to go, okay, that's not true. Let's find the self-compassion.
How do you build self-compassion?
Great question, honey. For me, it was those moments of reminder. As I said, I keep saying I'm still a work in progress. There are those times when I self-sabotage or self-betray or don't keep promises to myself. That's an act of self-betrayal. So finding one little promise that I can keep to myself, and what worked for me, I can only talk about what worked for me, is giving myself a little challenge. So it might be for today. It might be for 3 days, I'm going to do this 3 days in a row. It might be 5 days, 7 days. The longest one I've done, which was with a mantra that I used for 100 days, and then I would write it down, you know, actually physically write it down, and do those little posts and then cross it off. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1. And there was something really satisfying with that. So having those little challenges, keeping one promise to oneself for a certain amount of time, I have found with women, has been really helpful because we love a little challenge. And when we keep those little challenges, keep those little promises to ourselves, we build trust in ourselves. And I know, for me, it has been really helpful. But that's wonderful to be able to do that. And we don't always do that.
Exactly.
So then what I found is it was awareness, because I believe awareness is key to everything. And when I thought, well, this isn't working, this beating myself up with a big stick wasn't working, all it did was make me feel worse. And I would spiral down, shame spiral, I call it. Because we all have a shame file, and I always gently open that up for people because we need to be able to look at shame, and I know it takes a lot of courage. So for me, instead of then catching myself and getting more shame and harder and harder and harder on myself, and it wasn't a one and done thing. It was awareness and practice and going, I want to be friends with myself. I wouldn't talk to my best friend like that. And we first have to catch ourselves the negative things that we are saying to ourselves. A lot of people don't even have the awareness that they have this inner loop, and we turn in on ourselves and all of these horrible things we say to ourselves. It's abuse. And this self-abuse at some stage has to stop. But first, we have to become aware of it for ourselves. And a lot of this, in my experience over the last 10 years with women, some women aren't even aware that we're abusing ourselves like this. And then we are able to ask ourselves some of the realizations I've had. I was able to go, oh my God, that's my mother, or that's my father. And that's done without blame or anything else. It's just noticing, awareness. This is not my voice. It's my critical inner parent. It's that, and when we bring awareness and notice that, and they may happen in micro moments, but we build on those micro moments and go, I see you. I can hear you, but I'm not listening. This is not true. And I quite often go delete, 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 cancel, cancel, cancel. I'm like, I'm not listening to this. I just acknowledge it, and I'm not, because it's wounded in a child. I'm not listening to this. I'm choosing to delete this thought. And then I just go, I'm here. I've got you. I've got you. Loads of self-soothing practices, but that's a whole other
workshop. For me, that didn't work.
Oh,
noticing my inner critic and stuff, because I was aware of it for a long time.
Yeah,
it's never working. But what really worked for me was starting to work with my parts. So I was first trained in hypnotherapy and just doing parts hypnotherapy and integrating that and just understanding the positive intention. Because before I got the advice of just saying to my inner critic, stop, you out, quiet. And that just made my
We need to be gentle with ourselves.
It didn't work. But once I acknowledged what in parts hypnotherapy they teach, acknowledge the positive aspect of the critic. Like, thank you, you've been helping me all this time to feel accepted, be validated. I know that you want me to be accepted and to be loved and to be part of something. And then I discovered internal family systems, and they go even deeper with managers and protectors and all of that. And for me, that was the missing link in all of this inner critic and also finding compassion to myself, because everybody was talking about it, self-love and all, and it didn't work really until I really reconnected to my inner child. And yesterday I had this realization, what a wonderful life. I get to live this life like with my bestie, with myself, you know, with all different parts of myself. And yeah, I was like, so rad.
Yes, it's good. Yeah. It's a great realization. But the inner child work is presented in many different ways. It's just important that we acknowledge our inner child. It's something I do every day, just check in with her, because there's many different ways. But noticing how we talk to ourselves, however we choose to do it, is very important. And it's awareness. It all starts with awareness. So I think it's not just a thinking, it's a feeling that people will be able to choose. The more that they are introduced to it and choose something that they resonate with. For me, one of the most important things in my workshops is to offer as much information and sacred self-care practices and tools for body, mind, and spirit. And you choose for you what feels that something is resonating with you. Absolutely bring more of what you choose, not because someone's telling you to do it. There's too many of us sitting there going, oh, if you do that, and if you do that, and if you do that. But women need to be able to go, I want to choose for myself. It's more empowering than having someone to tell them to do.
Also, because we can naturally feel what nervous system state we are in. And sometimes we actually need something active. And sometimes we need to soothe and be in calmness. And sometimes when you are in this dorsal vagal tone, you need to actually get moving. And maybe dance would be better than just laying and feeling lethargic and apathetic.
Absolutely.
But if you're overstimulated in this fight mode, then probably the soothing practice would be better. And so I love that. But also I feel like people have to actually make that decision to choose. Because when I give a lot of tools, then sometimes what happens is that they choose nothing. It's like, there's so much, I don't know what to do. So like, yeah, you heard so many tools now today to just pick one thing that resonates with you and something that you want to practice. Maybe something you didn't even hear here. Maybe something that you heard in other podcasts or other books, whatever. And just start something. And also finishing off now, what is vitality to you? What is true vitality? What does that look like?
Vitality for me is having the energy. Energy is everything. The energy to do what I want, when I want, how I want, with who I want. It's managing my energy in a way that is expansive, so that when I'm feeling my most vital, that it lights me up, and I can feel the energy is serving others as well. That I can be present with myself, and the vitality is kind of coming from it actually feels like it comes from down for me. And when I feel my most vital, then I have a different experience in the world. I have a lighter experience in the world. It's like everything is a little bit more sparkly in the world. And yeah, we had beautiful connections, and it seems to just flow. And the vitality is something that I can also choose to feel, and all the practices I can choose to feel that every day. It doesn't mean I get it right every day, but that vitality is contagious.
Such a good answer. And I resonate with that so much. A while ago, I was pondering how every moment can be experienced in a million different ways, just based on how my state is at the time. And that's why all of our memories are so subjective. They're not what actually happened, because it's the way we experience that moment because of what state we were in. If I'm walking down the street and I'm super happy and I'm just like radiating this joy, my experience will be so much different rather than when I'm walking and I'm all like sad. Yes, I just love that. The inner state that is building our lives. Is there something else that I didn't ask you and you would like to share with people, that something that's come up that comes up to you, or something that you've been dwelling deeper lately, or maybe some realization that you had, reminder recently that made an impact for you?
I'm on the spot. Let me feel into that for a moment. I always remind women that it's okay not to feel okay. We're talking about sacred self-care and self-love. And in those moments of despair, depression, those moments when we're not feeling our best selves, when we're feeling resentful, or we're feeling jealous, or we're feeling whatever it is, these are the moments where finding your self-compassion is the most important. Not even setting up daily rituals and doing all the things that we've just talked about. It's reminding yourselves that you are enough even on those days when we're not feeling our best. It's reminding ourselves that it's okay not to feel okay. It's okay to not want to self-sabotage and self-betray, and it's okay not to get things right and we're not perfect. And to remind ourselves that it's that we are a human being, not a human doing, and that I honor all parts of you, all the fragmented parts of you, all the parts of you that you're disliking. You know, it's to honor all of us. It's not just to be able to be, you know, getting it right all the time, or being, you know, doing the right thing all the time. It's to honor those parts of us that are needing a lot more tender, loving care is what's coming up for me a lot at the moment.
Perfect. I can so resonate with that as well. Because I'm doing a lot of IFS work. It's just that nurturing for all of me, all the shadows. And I see when I do that, all the inner demons are turning into fluffy unicorns. So where can people find you? Where can they connect with you?
Okay. Probably social media, you know, Facebook and Instagram, of course. I have a website as well.
I'll put it down then in the description, your links. And thank you so much for being here with me.
Thank you, honey. Thank you. Thank you. I hope it all works out and goes well. But thank you for the opportunity. It's lovely to be able to be of service and share what we've been through, but also to be able to have any feedback and to be able to collaborate and work together and to realize that we are all in this together. All of us are in this together. No one's, you know, we may be on different parts of our journey, but we're all each other's teacher and each other's student. So thank you.
That's so lovely. Okay, thank you for listening. Let me know in the comments or in private messages what you took away from this podcast. And I see you in the next episodes. Bye.